Private American companies cut more jobs in September.
What will it take for firms to hire?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. This is the Midday Update for Marketplace.org, and it's Wednesday, October 6th. We have a new report this morning on private payrolls, and it's not great. According to ADP Employer Services, companies unexpectedly decreased their workforce by another 39,000 people last month.
Also ahead, Microsoft is trying to catch up with Apple at a store near it. And the top Halloween costume is music to the ears of revelers. But first,
let's make sense of this morning's employment report with economist Richard DeKayser of Woodley Park Research, joining us from Washington, D.C. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
39,000 private jobs cut. Will you put that number into context for us? How bad is this report?
Well, it's disappointing, naturally, and it's the worst number we've seen since January and the first decline that we've seen since January of this year. But two caveats. First, as economists are always quick to remind people, employment is a lagging indicator. So to a certain extent, this really just affirms what we've seen in so many other indicators with the housing slump and a fallback in consumer spending during the summer months. And also, this particular indicator, this ADP report, has been much less reliable than usual of late. It's underpredicted reality, that is the official government number, in 10 of the past 12 months, and by a pretty sizable amount of over 70,000 jobs.
Okay, well, Richard, a lagging indicator, of course, doesn't help somebody out of work. And I want to know, because we get teased with little signs of recovery, corporate earnings have been up, the stock market's been healthy. What's it going to take for companies to hire?
It's going to take consistently strong growth, and by that I mean GDP gains of 3% or better. The year started with nice growth around 4 or 5%. Then we had a summer slump with growth settling back around 2%. We really need to see that consistently over 3%. And the stock market seems to be somewhat encouraged that we might be moving back in that direction.
Okay, well, we hope so. Richard DeKayser of Woodley Park Research, thanks.
My pleasure.
Microsoft is still an infant in the retail store game. It's only opening its fifth bricks-and-mortar shop. But the location is interesting, directly across from the Apple store at the Mall of America in Minnesota. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports Microsoft is using a familiar model.
The Microsoft stores borrow heavily from the competition. Apple has a Genius Bar. Microsoft has the Answer Desk. The stores also have personal shoppers, classes, and a clean, modern look, just like Apple.
I think they realize that the Apple Store is a great marketing tool for Apple products.
Matt Rozoff is an analyst with a company dedicated to tracking Microsoft.
Microsoft is not just about Windows and Office and email at work, that there are consumer products that are actually fun and interesting to play with.
Things like the Xbox. The stores also sell sleek laptops that run the latest Microsoft software, and soon, Microsoft's answer to the iPhone. Microsoft's latest foray into consumer products comes next week when it introduces its new mobile phone platform. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Pennsylvania's deficit-ridden state capital, Harrisburg, is facing bankruptcy. The city's mayor has asked for state aid to avoid defaulting on bondholders who are already suing for overdue debt payments. Harrisburg is not the only city facing financial foreclosure, as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Harrisburg made a bad bet on a trash incinerator and now runs a deficit larger than its budget. The city will enter a state recuperation program that includes painful service cutbacks and higher taxes. More and more cities are looking to states for financial rescue, but the Urban Institute's Kim Rubin says in many cases, states have been hit harder than cities.
Local budgets are actually in better shape in that property tax revenues haven't really declined as much as state income taxes and sales taxes have.
Still, the National League of Cities finds 8 in 10 local governments are cutting services like police, fire, and school programs. The league's Chris Haney did the survey.
So there's going to be this push and pull, this negotiation between local and state governments about who funds services and covers the gaps.
Haney says only a growing economy that generates more tax revenue will ease the situation. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, October 6th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org. And now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us in the United States. Today, the head of the International Monetary Fund voiced concern about how governments are tinkering with exchange rates, currency exchanges, as a way to tackle their weak domestic economies. At the same time, in Europe this morning, a European Union-Chinese summit is focused on the currency issue. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
All right. So we've seen in this country there's been this cry over the weakness of China's currency, the yuan. Does Europe share that concern?
Yes, I would say probably just as much as the U.S. Europe is China's biggest export market, and there is a widespread feeling here that the Chinese are flooding this market with goods that are partly cheap because the Chinese are holding down the value of their currency. This, of course, makes it correspondingly difficult for European exporters to sell into China. And this is pretty clearly reflected in the figures. In the first half of this year, the EU sold about $100 billion worth of goods to the Chinese, much less than half what the Chinese sold to Europe.
And Europe and China aside for just a moment, Stephen, it seems the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, is fearful about a worldwide currency problem. Is that right?
Yes. So he says the effect of central banks around the world cutting interest rates and printing more money, which, of course, the US, among others, have done, the effect of this is to drive down the value of individual currencies. The IMF chief says this is dangerous. If everyone does it, everyone will then rush to protect their own industries from a flood of cheap imports, and international trade will suffer. The IMF chief says this could easily derail the global recovery.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Soccer fans in England stayed up all night to hear whether the country's legendary Liverpool team would be rid of its American owners. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports the team is rid of its American owners, kind of. The new owner's American, too.
The owner of the Boston Red Sox, John Henry, stepped in last night with an offer the Liverpool team couldn't refuse, paying off their debt of $450 million. That debt grew under the old owners, American businessmen Tom Hicks and George Gillette. They fought the sale but lost out to the team's board.
So they're not going to be at all happy about this, and I would imagine we'll pursue every possible legal channel to block this going through.
Professor John Beach studies sports and tourism at Coventry University. He says UK soccer fans always prefer a local owner, and today they'll start scrambling to find fault with John Henry.
I mean, everybody's been frantically looking at Google and Wikipedia to find out exactly who he is. He's not a known quantity in this country.
Beach says fans are already talking about how John Henry renovated Fenway Park for the Red Sox. Liverpool's played in its current stadium since Victorian times, and they wonder if he'll try to spruce it up instead of building a new one. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, October 6th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. New Jersey. We were talking earlier about cities being in financial trouble. The state of New Jersey might pull the plug on an $8.7 billion commuter rail tunnel under the Hudson River. Governor Chris Christie says the tunnel is busting New Jersey's troubled budget. And unfortunately, that is a taste of the future for states around the country. From WNYC, New York, Andrea Bernstein has our story.
Thank you. It was a beautiful day in June 2009, and scores of officials and laborers gathered for a groundbreaking at a construction site near Hoboken, New Jersey.
To say I'm excited today would be an understatement.
That was the former New Jersey governor, John Corzine. He wanted to build a tunnel to double transit capacity from New Jersey to New York. He put up $2.7 billion. $3 billion would come from the federal government. Here's Federal Transit Administrator Peter Rogoff at that groundbreaking.
That $3.0 billion commitment will be the largest commitment made to any transit project anywhere in the United States by the U.S. Department of Transportation in the history of the U.S. Department of Transportation.
But Democratic Governor Corzine was replaced last November by Republican Chris Christie, a fiscal conservative. Last month, Christie stopped new construction on the project, citing what he feared would be a multi-billion dollar cost overrun.
And New Jersey's broke.
Christie's out campaigning for fellow Republicans in the Midwest this week. In Chicago yesterday, he said New Jersey can't afford to spend more.
And the federal government's made it clear that New Jersey will be on the hook for any cost overruns on the project.
Planners like Tom Wright, who've worked for decades on this project, say they're heartbroken by the prospect of its demise. Wright is the executive director of the Regional Plan Association. He says there are already 250,000 commuters a day from New Jersey to New York.
Without increasing the capacity in the transit system, that number just can't go up very much higher. There's just no more space on the roads and the bridges and the tunnels.
Governor Christie's official word on the future of the tunnel could come as early as today. In New York, I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
And that story is part of a public radio project called Transportation Nation. You can see what New Jersey's tunnel might have looked like. It would have been spiffy. Yeah. Those photos are at marketplace.org.
The latest midterm election polls show Democrats may lose control of Congress. Conservatives have been campaigning on the theme of financial responsibility, given our nation's deficits the past, many years. It's a popular theme that economist mom Diane Lim Rogers, chief economist at the Concord Coalition, says is easy to talk about, yet so very hard to follow through with. She's with us now. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Steve.
I want to start with the Tea Party candidates. A lot of these candidates are promoting smaller government and lower taxes and lesser government deficits. I mean, is their rise good news for fiscal responsibility?
Unfortunately, I think that the Tea Party movement has been more about low taxes and less about the low spending that would be needed to get us to low deficits at the same time.
House Republicans have put this pledge to America together, promising fiscal responsibility. Is that a serious plan? Can you look at that and say that's fiscal responsibility?
It is a vague pledge. They don't get specific on the ways that they would actually reduce the deficit or get back to fiscal sustainability over the longer term.
All right, let's talk about the Democrats now and the Bush tax cuts that are set to expire at the end of this year. The Democrats argue that the fiscal responsible thing to do would be to allow the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans to expire. Do the Democrats win any award for fiscal responsibility with that idea?
Although it is true that if you let the upper brackets expire, you save about $700 billion over 10 years, you're still choosing to extend most of the Bush tax cuts at a cost of over $2 trillion over those same 10 years.
Diane, why should people care about this? Why should parents care about fiscal responsibility?
If you care about the future for your children, if you work really hard to save for your kids' education, if you take care of them and take them to doctor's appointments and pay for violin lessons and pay for SAT prep courses, you are working against yourself if at the same time you support candidates that promise things that are really too good to be true. And unfortunately, it's going to be our kids that pay for the bills that we are not willing to pay now.
Diane Lim Rogers, chief economist at the Concord Coalition. She's got a blog, economistmom.com. Diane, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
The next time you step into the liquor store, you could be stepping back in time. Marketers are trying to recreate peach brandy made by George Washington.
That's right, the father of our country. Not only led his men across the icy Delaware, he also produced a lot of alcohol. In 1799 alone, Washington's distillery put out 11,000 gallons of whiskey.
Wow, which could explain what happened to the Liberty Bell.
Yes, it actually could.
I'm just saying.
It's all coming together. And finally, in the $3 billion business of Halloween costumes, the top sellers are usually kid stuff. You got your witch, your fairy, your princess.
Your fairy princess?
Yes, yeah. Yes. But this year, it looks like the number one costume is a poker face. Very grown-up poker face. Retailers say they cannot stock enough Lady Gaga. The blonde wig, the huge sunglasses, that kind of thing. The raw meat dress, though.
Get off the counter, man. Why are you dancing like that?
sorry. You can't buy the raw meat dress. That's a do-it-yourself thing. But here's my question. Isn't Lady Gaga sort of a walking Halloween costume?
It seems a little too easy.
It's a little too on the nose.
Yeah. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
Baby, when it's love. if it's not rough, it isn't fun.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.